We are very fortunate to have three very, very good speakers, nationally known anti-war activists. They're going to be speaking not only on the elections and what we are facing in that, but also issues of movement building and what we are going to do on November 3rd with those 140,000 troops still in Iraq. The speakers, we have Daniel Ellsberg, author of the Pentagon Papers. Well, I was going to make a few words about him, but I think you already know who he is. We have Norman Solomon here. Norman is an author and columnist. And last but not least, the only person to get thrown out of both the Republican and Democratic conventions, Adia Benjamin. Well, this is great. You just made my job a lot easier and shorter. I give you Norman Solomon.
Thanks very much. Often in the last couple of years, I've had reason to remember something I heard at the first World Social Forum, the great Latin American writer Eduardo Galeano. He talked of walking down the streets of a Latin American city and seeing in big letters written in paint, "Let's save pessimism for better times." And as I think of the 15,000, and since then it's been 50 and 100,000 activists from around the planet, essentially every country in the world, gathering at the World Social Forum, I've thought about how really, if we lived in a just world, come November 2nd of this year, everyone on the planet would have a vote for President of the United States. But as we know, as in many other contexts, we don't have a just world. And so that puts a special responsibility on those of us who do have a right to vote in the United States on November 2nd for president. I've been very struck by the messages that we've gotten from people who are part of the worldwide activist communities for peace and social justice. For instance, Tariqa Lee, who has written, I think, very convincingly about what kind of impact it could have on movements around the world if the people of the United States reject the administration of George W. Bush. He says it would be a huge boost for people around the world, and I think if we look at it realistically, that is the case. But it's also a big boost for us if we wake up, and we don't know if it will be November 3rd or November 5th or December 5th, when finally we know who's won the election, whether George W. Bush has been elected, and I can't use the word re-elected, but elected, or whether Kerry has won. There are so many contexts in which I think now it's essential for us to consider the implications of one scenario versus the other. There's one area that I think has gotten insufficient attention among many, but one is the Supreme Court. The watchers of the Supreme Court find that realistically at least one and quite possibly three, so let's say two, of the nine seats will become vacant during the next 4 years. Among them, two of the three oldest, O'Connor and Stevens, both of them voting for Roe v. Wade. Does anybody think that George W. Bush is not ideologically driven enough, fanatically driven enough, fundamentalistly, if that's a word, driven enough to appoint virulently anti-choice justices to the Supreme Court? If we underestimated him 4 years ago, we should not do so now. And so it's not an exaggeration to say that the results of the election on November 2nd may determine whether a woman's right to choose an abortion is seriously curtailed or even outlawed. look at issues such as the environment, where we have a strong push from this administration. I'm not sure I can say this one is worse than any of all times, because there was the Reagan administration, but certainly no worse. Do we want to give them more of a free hand for the next 4 years? And then what for many people, when they look at it closely, the huge issue of civil liberties. Do we want to find out, and this is not only in terms of the Supreme Court, but the executive branch as well, do we want to find out how many fascistic elements of a second term of George W. Bush can turn out to be? We can guess, let's not find out. Now, it's possible that what we do won't make a difference, that the margin will be too large in one direction or the other. And anyway, there is no assurance that what we do will be the turning point, will be the tipping point. But if we took that approach, when it came to activism, we wouldn't even get out of bed in the morning. Gandhi said, full effort is full victory. It's essential for us, and we try to do this as best we can. Exert ourselves, apply our creativity and determination and discernment as best we can to make a difference. Now, if we look back at the last 4 years and extrapolate out, I think, to the next 4 years, I think we can make some plausible predictions about, extrapolations about where things would go. And I want to say that I was at a news conference in 1996 in San Francisco announcing for and expressing support for the presidential campaign of Ralph Nader. In 2000, I spoke publicly and voted for Ralph Nader as well. I don't intend to do that this year for some reasons I've already alluded to, and other reasons as well. I think it's important that all of us be engaged in as candid and civil dialogue as possible on the left, because we're not going to all come to the same conclusions, but we do each other no good by saying things in private that we don't want to say in public, because we don't want to, you know, offend our comrades. And we know that we hope to work together with people with whom we're in disagreement on this issue. I've been troubled by, of course, the Democratic Party's efforts to push Nader off the ballot, and I'm very much opposed to that. And likewise, it's clear that our long-term solutions include something like instant runoff voting, which should be the law of the country. So we need to make that a reality, and at the same time, as the saying used to go, be here now, recognize it is not the reality now. And so when we look at the fact that the Republican Party of Michigan, which, by the way, is not a moderate Republican state party, whatever a moderate Republican is, it is a very right-wing party. And the Republican Party of Michigan, as part of its official activities this summer, collected 45,000 signatures to put Ralph Nader on the Michigan ballot. The Nader campaign collected another 5,000. It was the Republican Party of Michigan who got Ralph Nader on the ballot in Michigan, and it was Ralph Nader who accepted their help. I was always brought up to believe, and I still believe, that one of the responsibilities of the left is to fight fascism. It's not a responsibility of the left to hold itself all too pure. We're never going to sully our hands with any sort of choice in electoral politics that deviates from our purity. It's a responsibility for us to say that we're in common cause with people who will suffer from policies that we oppose. And that might seem to be obvious, but sometimes it isn't. How well will we be able to organize if there is a successor to the Patriot Act that's even far worse? And is it true, as sometimes is the subtext, and even sometimes is explicitly stated, that the worse it gets, the better it gets? I think it's already gotten bad enough. I think millions of people understand clearly that it's gotten bad enough. And I've always wondered, What would it be like to, at dawn, go and talk to the people who are getting on those stinky buses to take a long meandering ride so they can work for minimum wage, so they can come home, so that they can feed their kids, so that they can wonder how they can pay for healthcare emergencies? What would it be like to go to them and say, you know, the worse it's going to get, the better it's going to get? The left is going to gain strength when it shows that it cares about people who are suffering under this corporate system. And I think that's what Noam Chomsky has been talking about in recent weeks as he's tried to explain why he supports voting for Kerry in swing states. He says that it shows to people, if we say, well, look, I don't care whether Kerry wins or Bush wins, you know, I have bigger fish to fry, it's conveying to them that I don't really care about your situation right now. I'm thinking long term. I'm thinking so long term that you don't even matter. Your lifespan may not even matter. That's a message that people have a, you know, clear option to convey. I don't think we build progressive movements, including independent political parties, third parties, or as some might say, second parties, by doing that. We have the reality, obviously, of corporate power. It's huge. It colors everything in our society, foreign policy, domestic policy. We have also media power, obviously intertwined. And it's one of the issues, and I know Seattle was the initiator of the indie media movement. It started here during the WTO. And I remember being at the kickoff ceremony in November of 1999, when this little project called the Indy Media Center was getting off the ground. Who would have thought that there are thousands of them around the planet? It's because people dared to imagine it was possible and got to work. And that obviously is what we need to do on so many different issues, including media issues. And when you look at what has happened with the FCC and last year, the tremendous organizing drives that we're engaged with, coalition building, that said to people, look, we don't accept selling off the airwaves to the highest bidder. We don't accept the monopolization of the media. We don't accept that the so-called public airwaves have been hijacked by corporations so we can get Rush Limbaugh and Michael Reagan and the rest of the gang. And people organize and they effectively push through Congress a rollback by the FCC's effort to further corporatize the airwaves. And then the movement hit a brick wall, and the brick wall was called the Bush White House. And that measure went nowhere. And what we discovered was that there was a difference between this president and another president, both the last one and the next one, in terms of appointments to the FCC. You look at one vote after another on the FCC, 3-2. Three Republican appointees, including the chair, who is the happens to be the son of Colin Powell. And you have two dissenters who are the Democrat appointees. And that is the reality. There's no way around it. We've got the corporate power, the media power, and we have the state power. And let's face it, this administration is the farthest right, the most extreme right-wing presidency in our memory and perhaps in U.S. history. That's a reality that we have to come to terms with. And I think it's so important that we not look back on this time and say, I didn't realize what was at stake. It somehow, it seemed a little foggy at the time. It's not foggy. It's very clear. As I started out by saying, I think it's fair to say it's crystal and excruciatingly clear to so many people around the planet. What a relief, what a joy, what a opening of new possibilities it would be to get Bush out of the White House. And I don't mean that we have then accomplished anything affirmatively in terms of what we want to do. We have made possible what we want to proceed to do, and that is to build an anti-war movement that can get U.S. troops out of Iraq. That's what's essential in terms of Iraq. And just imagine, let's be realistic, with all of our efforts, How realistic do we think? What are our odds? And I'm not saying this should stop us. We're going to go all out from November 3rd onwards, as we are doing now, to get U.S. troops out of Iraq. But has this administration shown any evidence of rational response to anything, including an anti-war movement? And let's compare that to the possibility, given the base of the Democratic Party, which, as we know from polls of the delegates, is strongly anti-war. It's a very different constituency. The base of the Democratic Party being so different, it is more possible, I think that's beyond dispute, it is more possible that a strong anti-war movement could have a major impact on a Kerry administration. Nothing's assured, but it's possible, and we need to create the conditions to explore that possibility. Otherwise, we don't have it. And then there's the Ashcroft Justice Department, which I think is an oxymoron. The Ashcroft Justice Department is worse than I could have plausibly imagined. The implications are serious, to put it mildly. And there is the possibility that, I would say the probability, that in the last year, year and a half, even 2 years, the Ashcroft Justice Department has been operating with a very conscious sense of constraint. The constraint being the knowledge that an election was coming up in 2004, and that just as in 2000, when Bush talked about how he didn't want to do nation building, how he was a passionate conservatism, as the election gets closer, there's a need to avoid provocative actions. If there is another 4 years for Bush, those sorts of constraints on the Bush administration will largely disappear. This has obviously been a very difficult few months for the left as we've tried to sort out what to do in terms of this election. And I think often of something that was a great focus, a great emphasis of Martin Luther King Jr. during the last couple of years of his life. He talked about poverty, racism, and militarism, the deadly triplets. We look at the class warfare that is now at such an extreme level in this country under the Bush administration. We look at the racism that we saw in Florida 2000. And do we really want to say that that travesty, that outrage, that crime against democracy should not be in some way redressed this year? That the racism that is inherent in so many administration policies are not that significant, that the gap between the Bush administration and the predictable Kerry administration is not significant enough to be concerned about. Obviously, the African Americans in this country, including the entire Congressional Black Caucus, feel very strongly about the need to defeat Bush. And then there's militarism, and nobody can stand here, and nobody will stand here and say that John Kerry is not a militarist. He is. But we still come back to the neocon agenda, which has its sights set on other countries around the planet. And our inclination, particularly at this late date, to give the Bush administration any benefits of any doubts could be extremely tragic, not only for the people of this country, but everyone on the planet. Thank you very much.